All right, it's September 2nd, 1988, and we have it with Michelle Nolan. What's your name?
Michelle Nolan.
Where were you born?
In San Francisco.
And what is your permanent address?
364 San Benito.
You want to say it louder?
364 San Benito. Area code 94127.
San Francisco,
California.
And when were you born?
52469.
And as you know, I took a photograph and I want to use it for my book called Addict. And I'm going to do a lot of 50 other addicts. Of your photograph on one page and then your story on the other page. So I basically want you to tell me about your childhood and what happened and everything was alright. Was our episode something interesting that another addict might read and get hope and your spiritual path. So send me
Cool. Okay. Or
you're talking to a sponsor or wherever. You have 9 minutes if you want.
9 minutes.
Okay.
I was born in 69, which is like the summer of love, and I was born to two people who weren't married, a French woman and an English man, and the father, my biological father did not know that his girlfriend or whomsoever he might choose to call her was pregnant with me, and she did not tell him, and she went ahead and had me, and I was put up for adoption like instantly after birth, and so I have abandonment and rejection issues as far as like day one, as far as like right after birth, and I was adopted by the parents, my legal parents that I have now, I was adopted about 2 months after birth, 3 months, maybe August. I was adopted into a like upper middle class family, into a dysfunctional family that I didn't know that I had. All my life, I had there was two other brothers. My father was married before and had two sons as a result of that marriage, who were both learning disabled and hyperkinetics. And my own personal diagnosis, if I was able to take their inventory, would be to say that they were addicts, alcoholics, sick people, whatever. My father was always bought. Everything he did, he was kind of like that. He controlled everything and everyone by money. And I was given no emotional support, you know, growing up all my life. No emotional support. So psychological support. And he began to drink very heavily from when I was small, I can remember. And in the early 1970s, my mother told me a story of when she was watching Days of Wine and Roses, and I looked up into the TV screen and I said, "Is that what's wrong with my daddy?" So I knew at a very small age that my father was an alcoholic. My mother growing up, you know, through my early childhood was a best, you know, like my best friend. She, you know, I had no father, and so my mother played both roles, and she was just there for me like I thought she was there for me, really. Went to a private school and began to like isolate. I was really scared, and I thought that I was I can remember like second grade, third grade. I always thought I was either better than everybody else or worse. You know, it's like I had more talents. I could do more stuff, smarter, me. And I also thought, you know, it's like I was the worst one, and I was always like the last one picked for like the PE games, like in second and third grade. I isolated from early grammar school up to today, you know. 19 and a half years of like isolation and sabotage, self-sabotage. I was very scared of drugs when I was younger, and they were always like a bad thing, and it was always something that my brothers were into that I was never recommended to take part of. They were really scary because I didn't want, you know, my parents to think of me what they thought of my brothers or what they said to me about my brothers and how bad that they were. And you know, you don't have sex, you don't smoke, and you don't take drugs and steal. Those messages were very clear, but however, something bizarre happened and they all got turned around. My drug use began when I was 15. And I started, the very first drug I used was MDMA, methamphetamine, and I loved it. I felt instantly I felt like I automatically like accepted myself, like I was okay. I was okay in my own skin, you know, I wasn't disappointed with the way I looked. It seemed like for the first time I felt something. It seems like I had never felt all my life. And all of a sudden I use drugs and I feel this sort of like happiness and the stimulation that was not there before. And I can remember from the very first time I ingested drugs into my body, that the messages in my head, I was automatically already trying to, you know, defend my usage. Thinking, oh, you know, if those people who talked about how bad drugs were, if they had actually tried them, then, you know, they wouldn't be saying, don't use them. And that's where my rationalization and denial began. My addiction progressed over 4 years. And when I turned 18 and met a bunch of people, got introduced to freebasing. I was curious, you know. I was happy with my other like fun drugs, and that was like my big thing. And in the process of like in between this, I mean, I had experimented with did mushrooms and acid and pot, speed, MDA. I liked anything that would like wire me and keep me up. I liked that extra energy. I didn't like drinking, you know, that much, because it always seemed to have sort of had the opposite effect that I wanted to. And pot also, I didn't really like to smoke pot a lot because I was really tired of being down and depressed. I always wanted to be up and happy and alive. And I got introduced to a freebasing. And from the get-go, from the very first hit, I could not stop. I never remember a time that I really enjoyed freebasing. All I knew is that if I didn't get a hit right after the last hit, that I was going to, like, you know, I was going to hurt, and I didn't want to hurt. I just thought I was going to go nuts. And I went to any length to get that another hit, and any length. I was fortunate enough to have this happen at a pretty good time in my life. I mean, I think it was a pretty good time. When I just turned 18 and I was supposed to be looking for a job, I graduated high school. My drug use interfered with my high school education, which was very important to me. I was like enrolled in a Catholic high school, and I wanted to be an artist. So I wanted to be sort of my ambition when I was a senior in high school was to take drugs and go to clubs and dance and wear funny clothes and to be like a living art form to me, which is a living art form. Was just, I was a very visual person all my life when I grew up. I was always like going into stores and like meeting things on the shelves and just anything that just fit. I'm just always a very visual person. Got scary. The freebasing land was, it just got real scary, and it got to where I was hanging out with strippers and people that were buying cocaine by the quarter kilo, and they slept with the, you know, 357 magnums under their people, under their pillows, and it just got really scary, and I got scared, and I thought, you know, that I was going to like die. And I used to like smoke so much cocaine, I'd be smoking cocaine for like 3 days, you know, and I used to like get up and like throw up and keep throwing up and go back and smoke some more. Sometimes I'd sprinkle some, you know, heroin on the cocaine, but I never really liked it. It always made me too nauseated, and I never liked it. But for some reason, I just kept doing it again. Freebasing, I never really liked it. Somehow, I always ended up doing it again and again and again. I would promise myself I'm not going to use. And I would do it again and again. I got real tired of seeing the people that I was using with. I got real tired of how their attitude changed, you know, when they ran out of drugs. I got real tired of having to, I got real tired of having to not be able to be the person that I wanted to be and sit there and be quiet so someone would feed me drugs. I got real tired of, like, you know, needing to, like, I got real tired of, you know, I did, this is part of my own disease. It's like I felt like the only way I could be appreciated or valued was to give something in return, and how I did that was by sleeping with people to get drugs, or to not, better yet, to not feel as guilty about using, you know, they're using, you know, they seem to, like, you know, like me better if I sleep with them and then use, etc. July 14th, 1987, I got sick and tired of being an addict and practicing addict. And I decided I wanted to get recovery. And if there was such a thing, I really didn't know. The only thing I knew about were those Azzies, seeing the papers about, yeah, call base if you want to clean up or whatever. And I got on the phone, I knew someone that was, like, in the program, in Narcotics Anonymous, and I called her, and I said, you know, I need a name of, like, a hospital I want to go. You know, I need some, like, help. And I just gave me the number of a treatment facility in San Rafael, California, which I went to that night. It was a really, really hard thing for me to do. I was, you know, I just turned, like, 18, and I drove, you know, to my mother's office. She worked in this office building downtown, and I drove in there, and I went, and I had, like, 4 days, and I hadn't slept for, like, 4 days, and I had, you know, makeup all over my face and the same clothes on, and I walked in, and I started crying, and I told her, you know, Mother, you know, I'm a cocaine addict, and I have a very expensive habit, and, you know, I want to get some help, and, she helped me, you know. She said, yeah. She threw me in the car, brought me home, and I threw a bunch of stuff in a suitcase, and she drove me to the hospital. When I was in the hospital, you know, I'm lucky. I feel lucky that I was able to be introduced to Narcotics Anonymous by three different institutions. And that's, I mean, that's helped me. That's made me who I am today. The first institution I registered to go for 45 days, and I thought, gosh, that seems like a long time. And little did I know that it was not that long of a time. And I went, and I couldn't feel, you know, I couldn't think. All I did was like sleep and wake up, and I did what they tell me to, and I answered the questions in a little Hazleton step booklet, and the counselors there kept grabbing my books and said, no, you know, I'm sorry, you're not powerless yet, you know, we're going to send you to long term, you know, you haven't gotten it yet, you're not feeling. And I sat there and just sort of naturally anesthetized, just kind of shook my head and said, whatever, I didn't understand. And I had these feelings of, again, being less than and not being able to fulfill, like, do what I'm supposed to do, not being able to play the game right. I didn't feel like adequate, like I could give them what they wanted. But I was lucky because I did give myself like what I wanted, and they sent me off to long term with my Agreel treatment center that was like 2 months, and I began to clear up a little bit in the second treatment center. And at the end of that, and I did a 4-step and did my 4-step 3 days in Montana, in the wilderness, all by myself. I didn't talk to another human being for 3 days. It was a very kind of intense experience, and it really got me in touch with being powerless. Being powerless, you know, I just prayed that the sun would, like, shine every day. After I graduated that treatment center, they suggested that I go to a halfway house, and I agreed. And I fell in love with the program when I was at this halfway house, and I was going to about 11 meetings a week, and I really had the feeling of being like I was okay. You know, all of a sudden, you know, going to all these meetings and I'm seeing people, and it's like I'm okay today. You know, and I walked in with like 2 different colored hair, and I was scrunchy clothes and stuff, and I was okay. You know, no matter what I looked like, I still got hugs. People loved me. People called on me at meetings and asked me to share. You know, it's like they wanted to know, like, what I was about. And it was just a phenomenal feeling of okay, just that I was okay and I was loved no matter what. And I came back. I moved from Colorado. I had 6 months of continuous abstinence from alcohol and drugs. In January of 88, and I came back to California and decided I wanted to go to art school. So I registered and went, and my priorities were then that I wanted to go back to the same lifestyle that I had, but just not have it incorporate drugs. I wanted to go back to you know, the places that I went to dance and the friends that I used to hang out and the music, and I wanted it all the same, just without the drugs. And I stopped going to meetings for 3 months, and I had virtually nothing to do with the program for 3 months. I stayed clean by the grace of God. I started hurting the day that I had my 9 months clean birthday. And I called this counselor, and I had written this big suicide letter. And not that I would ever actually do that, you know. I didn't want to, like, commit suicide, but I wrote the suicide letter just so I could let people know, you know, how bad, you know, that I felt inside, because I wanted people to take pity on me. And I wanted people to say, oh, it's not my fault. I didn't want to take responsibility for my life or my recovery. And 9 months, I went to talk to this counselor, and she said, okay, you know, you have 2 choices. You can either go to meetings, you know, and maybe, like, make it to your year birthday, or you can keep on doing what you're doing, and I guarantee you will die. And I told her right then, I said, I don't know if I'm willing to go to 90 meetings in 90 days and all this other shit. You know, I'm not into that. I don't want that. I had forgotten how good it was when I was in Colorado. I was still clean, and I decided. It was like I left, and I told her, no, I'm not going to be able to do this. But right when I left from her office, I went straight to a meeting, and I had been to a meeting every day since. In the last 3 months, I've gotten more gifts than since four months, since about my 9 month birthday. I've gotten more gifts and felt more true happiness than I have in, you know, 18 years. That feeling of being accepted, you know, walking down the street and and running into, you know, I walk down the streets in San Francisco and I can run into other addicts. And it's just an incredible feeling, you know, walking to people on the sidewalks, like, hey, how you doing? You know, it's not like, hey, what's up, you know, and walk around and leave. It's, hey, how you doing, you know, and I can honestly tell them, I'm not feeling good right now, you know, can we chat? And I dump on them, you know, and I tell them what's going on. Today, you know, it's like I choose to do the work that I need to do to stay clean. Today I choose to go to meetings. Today I choose to have a sponsor and call her. Today I choose to practice 24 spiritual principles in my life on a daily basis. In recovery, you know, I think that the spirituality part, the fact that I have a higher power, you know, I used to, when I first got clean, I kind of called it Force Be With You, like Star Wars, because I didn't really have that defined. It's just, I don't care, I don't need a name, it's just there, I have a power that's greater than myself, and I have a power that brought me back from the dead. I have somebody up there and out there who really cares about, you know, my existence, because they brought me back from the dead, or almost the dead, you know, I was spared death. I have people that I call, you know, if I'm hurting, you know, if I want to use, I have people that I can choose to call in San Rafael, you know, in San Francisco, in Colorado, in Idaho, up and down California. You know, it's Michigan. It's a real neat space to be in, is to have people that I can call long distance and even call collect if I want to. It's a real nice feeling to be able to be welcomed, you know, on the phone, or have my feelings be validated by someone else who's willing to listen to them. There's been a lot of simple, like, things that have been, like, sidekicks of sobriety. Like, I was able to graduate high school with my high school diploma. I didn't want a GED. I wanted to get my Catholic, you know, high school diploma, which I had worked for 3.5 years for. And I was able to get that. I was able to go to the art school of my choice. Which is here in California. I've been able to make mistakes. You know, I was never capable of having a relationship with another human being when I was using. Now today, it's like, that's an option, you know, and I have a relationship, you know, relationship in my life today that is phenomenal. I mean, I could never understand, you know, why people are like that. You know, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, this and that, and I can feel love and feel accepted. I've had to work through a lot. I've had to work, you know. I've had to work through a lot of issues, like being molested. I've had to, you know, work through a lot of character defects and a lot of fear. You know, I like let fear handicap my life a lot. Recovery. Recovery to me is like a process. It's not. It's the opposite of a practicing addiction. It's a slow process. You know, for instance, part of my recovery has been 53 days ago. I decided to that I was addicted and powerless over cigarettes, and I had had enough of cigarettes. You know, I was tired of waking up with a smoker's hangover and spending, you know, the money, you know, to smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day. And I've been able to apply, you know, what I've learned through 12-step programs to having 53 days off of nicotine, which has been really great. You know, it's like the rewards. It's like, okay, if I stop smoking for one day, yeah, you know, that saves me $3. But stop smoking cigarettes, you know, for 2 months, and it's like all of a sudden there's $100 extra in my pocket. You know, it's like that difference between the $3 and the $100. I mean, that's what recovery is. It's like it's a long, steady, slow thing. And each time I go through like some pain or discomfort, it's like I grow a little bit. You know, I saw a film recently that was really bothering me, and it really set off like the craving and obsession. And I asked you know, my HP to remove it, and it was like, well, because I actually wasn't really that willing to let it go, but, you know, it's like I got through it, and 3 days after I saw the film, I've never been able to do such a thorough second step. I'm you know, proud of like who I am today. I'm doing what I want to do. You know, I'm making decisions for myself. I'm lucky to have this family that I've never had before. It's filled a void. It's like recovery right now is the most important thing in my life. And all these other things that used to be the highlights, like going out to these clubs and going buying shopping, you know, going shopping and doing this and that. It's like they've, you know, it's okay with me that they're not first choice because I'm happier with what I have today. Like I'm happy with my recovery today. You know, convention, for example, I was able to, you know, work as a house painter this summer to save the money to come. And, I mean, that's just a big step. I mean, that's an incredible thing. The fact that I was, like, you know, I'm able to, like, work for the money, you know, to buy the gas that goes into the car that gets driven to Los Angeles to go to this convention. You know, the money that I work for to register. So I'm feeling, I don't know, independence, and is just, it's like I'm, you know, there's a big war that's over, you know, and I do, you know, I feel today, and I'm not the kind of a, you know, addict that likes feelings, and I do have, like, negative feelings that I don't like, but somehow it's like they've always, you know, come through, and they've always been resolved, and through the pain, it's like I have, like, found a, it's probably a bad expression, but it's like there's always been a pot of gold at the end of that razor blade, you know, I still have a lot of things that I've, like, yet to work on. I'm real insecure, and my self-esteem issues are becoming very apparent, and my codependency issues are becoming even more so apparent, especially within the last 24 hours. I'm learning, you know, it's like for the first time, I don't know, about a month ago, I was able to look in the mirror, and, you know, I was like, I was okay with what I saw in the mirror. You know, I feel okay enough about, you know, my, you know, physical self to, like, be able to, like, share it with another person. And I feel okay enough about my emotional status and spiritual status to be able to talk to a stranger, you know, and say, hey, this is what's going on with me, and be able to take the risk and be real honest. Honestly, that's a good thing to talk about. I'm learning. You know, it's taken me about a year and a half a little over a year to redefine the word honesty. I thought honesty was like not telling a lie, and now I've really discovered the meaning of honesty, and it's being true to myself. And but there was by no means any way that I do that. But I'm learning more and more every day, you know. I learned something today, you know. I had an issue with another person today, and you know, what I really wanted was to say no, but I was too scared, you know, to say no for fear of I was upsetting another person. And that's, I wasn't being honest with myself. I was not practicing my first honesty. I feel real comfortable. It took me 3 months to learn that it was okay to say I'm scared, I'm frustrated, I'm sad, and I'm feeling joy. So those four feelings, sadness and frustration, which sometimes provokes anger, and then the fear. They're like the root of, like, everything. They're the root of those, one of those four is, like, every time I interact with another human being, one of those four feelings is felt, and I need to, when I'm doing my best is when I'm, I can recognize which of those four feelings it is. And when I have a conflict with another person, it's easy for me, when I can establish which feeling it is, it's easier for me to deal with the problem on a rational, in a rational way. I have another real, like, scary hang-up. Another one of my inacceptance issues is the fact that I'm 19 years old, and people I've hung out with all my life have been in their 30s and 40s, and I'm real scared, and I hate being around people that are my age. I mean, you know, I want to be bigger, and I want to be better, and I have this, all this image stuff, the black cowboy boots with the silver tips on them, you know, there's always this visual image stuff that I crave, and sometimes it gets in the way of my recovery. But, you know, maybe I'll find a healthy way, you know, to be able to balance out. To me, art and drugs were kind of like the same thing, and now I'm starting to learn that there's a difference. There's a big difference. I have a message to give, and that is that, that I'm clean, and I think that no addict need die. He seeks recovery. And I have a couple 24 hours of that recovery, and I want to pass it on, and I want to pass it on to people who, special people like me.